What's going on with dance and stuff? What's happening with dance and things? What's going on? What's happening? What's going on with dance and stuff?
Hi, Jeremy.
Hi.
Hi.
We weren't talking about stuff that...
The guests are joining us kind of in the middle of a topic, but...
About overpaying for subscriptions for things.
Yeah, and I just want to say, looking at my expenses for this year, this might have been one of my stupidest, most irresponsible years where I was, like, paying monthly for Audible.
And oh, yeah, you want to know a stupid thing? I just... Because I've been going through things to clean up. I was paying... Well, we were paying for phone insurance. That I think when I originally did it, it was like $7 a month, which is also crazy, probably. Yeah. But I was like, I just don't want to think. I don't want to worry about this.
Yeah.
But now it was, I think it was maybe $17 each.
A month?
A month. So I did have this like hairline crack in my screen that I've had for 6 months. Because it's like, who cares? Wow. If I'm using the phone, I can't even see it. It's like if I'm looking at it from an angle, whatever.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to go have this get fixed, and then I'm going to cancel this nonsense. So.
You have to. I'm going to cancel a few things. I already fixed the Audible problem. Because I must have downloaded Audible to for one book.
Yeah. A trial.
But, a trial. Forgot to cancel it. And then... I'm like $14.95 a month. What am I paying for? So I go into Audible. I have this subscription. And what happens is if you don't download at least a book a month, they give you a token. Okay. So I downloaded 12 or 14 books. And then I cancel my subscription. And you get to keep the audiobooks. So I actually am listening to Errand Into the Maze.
Well, you paid for
on
it.
On audio.
You know.
I sure did. In fact, I paid hundreds of dollars for it.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Well, my Verizon, last week, I was, dealing with a Verizon scenario, which was about Netflix and, Paramount Plus.
Oh, no.
And essentially, that led me into the phone call sent me a link via text to a chat. That's what that ended up being. And this person could...
I don't understand
So,
you had a chat.
I called back... And it was a voice, an automated voice, that then sent me a link via text to open a browser that was a chat with a person. Which I'm totally prefer that in general.
Yeah.
But why did I have to call to come around to this? It was insane.
Oh, you mean a text chat?
No, it was on my computer. I don't know, I probably could have had the browser in my...
No, but you didn't speak with them with your voice, is what I mean. You were doing a typing chat?
Well, originally it was a phone call, but the phone call was an automated voice, so I didn't actually talk to someone.
It literally just
sent me a link after telling me some stuff.
Uh-huh.
So it was just from a computer to a phone to all of which
terrible.
Was chatting with this person who could not figure it out.
Yeah.
So they were like, don't worry, we'll take care of it. So I was like, okay, just to clarify, I don't have to do anything, whatever. So then nothing happened. So then I entered, found my way back to the chat. And this person was like, this isn't Verizon. This is, a third party subscription. Meanwhile, I'm like, well, Netflix says it's handled by Verizon. And the charge was from Verizon. So I was like, bye, I'm just gonna go through my credit card and be like, this is not a thing, which is what I did. I think I still currently have Netflix, so I don't think it's fully resolved, but
is right. It's all criminals. I think I got through all of my credit card. Anyway, I don't even want to... Honestly, I'm boring myself talking about tax expenses, but...
It's so
hideous,
but it does feel good to, check these things off. Been doing a lot of these kinds of things.
At the end of the day, it's smart to keep track. I should do this once a month.
People,
that way I would...
Back in the day, they would call it balancing your checkbook.
Right. And now here I am looking at like four different digital things and like my Venmo history to try to do my taxes.
It's too many things.
Oh, the things that Apple has billed me for. I'm like, what are all these numbers? And then I went into the system. I'm like, oh, right. That makes sense.
Yeah, doing your taxes is a helpful thing in terms of catching, like, oh, what is this recurring payment that's, like, from...
Oh, my God.
N39
big I've been boys. Paying $10 a month for it to keep a gym membership dormant.
Incredible. It's, yeah. Well, I mean, we had this water leak, you know? It's the same issue. You just have this, like, leak in your finances where just money is God. Just, like...
Trickling bye. Out.
So
yeah, I lost probably $1,000 or so this year for no good reason. More maybe.
You have to work. It's like one awful client. It's worth of money.
Yeah. there's certain monthly expenses that are not cheap that I'm just like, well, I have to. Like Adobe, it's just like, well, yeah, just,
you know,
I
like $600 a year.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
My Vimeo is also crazy.
Oh, I paid like a flat yearly rate of like $100 or something.
Well, I have like, you know, because most of my work is a video, so it's like a significant amount of money. But
these people trick you because initially when you encounter them, you're like, free, I love it. And then when you actually need them, like you become dependent on them, they're like, $1 million, please. And you're like, okay.
That's
no
right.
problem.
I mean, I do.
Because you're like, I don't want to learn how to do another thing.
I do appreciate the Adobe subscription dynamic in that you always have the update and you're not like feeling tragic in that way. Where you're like,
I mean, sometimes I really resent the updates sometimes when I'm like, are you kidding? Now I have to like be a student at design school again and like relearn how to use this thing.
But you also
thing.
Have to buy a more powerful computer after the update.
Well, my computer at this point is just fine.
For yeah, me. Mine is too, but it'll happen.
And my Mac hack for all you people out there who are investing in a new computer, and I probably said this years ago on the podcast when I did this, is to get the Mac Mini external computer, and then just buy a monitor that like suits your needs, and you're gonna end up spending way less than buying a big old iMac.
Yeah, I do think it's like a very different computer, but I
think
for most
so. As
people,
as soon as you turn it on, you're like, boom, you're well, Macintosh, you're Mac.
Of course, I'm just saying
Apple computer
power and whatnot. It's a different capacities.
Well, the Mac that object comes in various strengths and sizes, I think.
Yeah.
Anyways,
strangely,
it's
the first time this is the first time this has ever happened, but my screen on my iMac has what my TV had, which is like weird kind of coloration issues in the corners.
Oh, like burnt,
which I've never seen
like
before.
Burns or something. You know, Mac really prides himself on like perfect resolution and everything, you know?
But
resolution.
That's that. Anyway. Wow.
From my end, the listeners are probably hearing the sound of coffee trickling because I'm doing pour over, but I invested in a new pour over system that's just bringing me
it's
so much
It's really
joy.
Incredible. The sounds I hear from your recording are so different from the sounds I hear from your phone. And I'm like, wow,
well,
there was like a crazy storm that was happening of like this and that.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
but
yeah.
You know,
sometimes I just carry on.
It forces me to try to like learn something in the
oh,
in
about
the
my
sound
life.
Sound correcting.
Oh, could you try to remove it? Wow, thank you. I'm sorry. Well, you're gonna have a big project. Well,
here we
today.
Go. Some running water sounds. That came
running
through
water,
even over here.
Running coffee. A lot of creaking chairs because my chairs are so creaky. Anyways, how was your week?
My week has been, you know, very productive feeling because it's all of these kinds of things that are hideous. But today I'm in such a bad mood and I think it's just like come to a head where I'm like, I hate my life because this is what it's been. I've been doing these things.
Well,
and I'm like,
when you look at your tax, when you look at your expenses, really you're confronted by yourself.
Yeah. It's also like, I think at this point in the house, it feels like, okay, now I need to go back. Like, I replaced the modem because we were renting a modem through the, you know, which was like $5 a month or whatever. But like, you know, I'm like, this is silly. I should just get a thing and not be paying for this forever.
Right.
We bought a car, which is insane. And
another one? A different one?
Just one. Didn't we talk about this last week?
Yeah, because the other one was making noise, but it actually happened.
Yeah, we have a new car.
Oh, and do we love?
I've driven it once. Oh. Jeff hasn't even driven it yet, so.
Oh my God, what color is it?
Of course.
Black?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I would never get a black car, I don't think. I mean,
useful because I think cars are kind of generally kind of ugly because they have black things on them that can't be colored or, you know, or like, especially, I feel like a lot of cars right now have these like designs with like black. And so this car looks real chic. It's definitely.
Well, what's it called?
It's called a Prius.
Oh, that's famous.
It's famous.
Yeah. It's a famous car brand. That's the thing about me and cars. The reason I say I wouldn't have a black car is because I fear I would never find it. Because I have car blindness where I can't tell the difference between cars. Well, in terms of the shape.
It's a license plate thing.
Yeah, I don't want to always be looking at a license plate. Yeah. I'd either have to have a special shaped car, like a Saab. And I know those aren't made anymore. Or
you gotta get
just
your license
maybe
first.
Okay, Jeremy. I didn't intend for this.
And then what you're
going to
find is that you're going to get the same car everyone else has because that is the affordable car that you can have.
Right. The most practical, affordable is actually what we all need to do.
Yeah.
But anyways, what I was saying earlier is that everybody, if you live in New York City, you must go into this shop on Elizabeth Street called Kinto and look at their cups and coffee things and thermoses.
You absolutely must. This is what
you must
do.
You must.
Priority.
I realize I must get my driver's license, and you must go into Kinto, a thing that I've done many times at this point.
Do you buy things there?
I can't leave without buying something because I'm sick.
Okay, so what kind of store is this? What kind of vibe is it? Is it like a...
It's a Japanese home, like a Japanese dishes store. That's what it is.
But what, like a similar feeling of a store, it would be like, what's that, Muji? What is that called?
Oh, it's like one tick up from Muji in terms of like fanciness.
Right, towards like a Soho design store.
Where it's like at a Soho design store, you could buy a platter for $900 or whatever.
And there's like one and at
Muji,
on a shelf.
Right, and at Muji, you could get a platter for $40.
Right. So this is like
And then at this store, yeah, platter. But you can get a decent cup for $6 or $7. You can buy... I bought this whole coffee system, which is a glass carafe with a handle, which comes with a special mesh cone filter and a special separate thing that you can rest the filter in when it's draining. And that whole thing was $50.
Okay.
Yeah, really good. Mm-hmm. And I bought a thermos there for $40.
The thermos that
I love.
Showed me?
Yeah.
I see. Great.
Yeah. Anyways, that's my Kinto life, my new Kinto life. What else did I see anything this week? Oh my goodness.
What did you see? You didn't see Dune. If you saw Dune last night after I asked you if you saw Dune, I'd be very upset.
I didn't see Dune.
You can't see it for a couple months until there's the seats.
Right, until there's a seat at an IMAX. Because I'm determined to see it in IMAX. Determined. Anyways, I saw The Outsiders.
Oh, the musical with Barton. Wow.
The musical with Barton.
And,
well, I felt on the way to the theater, which is literally across the street from the Danson Theater.
Uh-huh. And was it Parade?
Parade was next door. Wait. You know, it was either Parade or this... or this play that Jodie Comer did that was called, the, I don't remember what it was called.
I love that play.
And so on my way there, I just had...
This is previews?
Some kind of... Yeah, it was the dress rehearsal even.
Oh, wow. Great.
So, which is like always the first show with an audience. So I went, and our associate from Danson, Chris, he was our assistant on Danson. He's working on The Outsiders. Great. As an assistant, and he got us tickets to the dress rehearsal. Nice. So yeah.
Well, you're insiders now. You're Broadway babies.
We're inside baseball for sure. We're Broadway. So we go to the theater, and I'm thinking, this is hell.
Absolutely.
Right, and I'm like having PTSD, and so line up, go in the theater, sit down. The show begins, and I'm just like, why is Broadway like this? You mm-hmm. know? And then, like, I kind of settled in.
Yeah.
And I don't want to lie. I don't want to tell a lie. I did consider leaving at intermission.
Uh-huh.
I did, because I was like, I don't know how much more of this kind I think it's of a, songs.
You
I
can... stayed through a whole half of a musical. I think that's already a lot.
A lot.
But you stayed.
But I stayed because I was told that there's an amazing scene in the second act, and I was like, okay. So I sit down and watch the rest of the show, and I have to say, second act, much better. Uh-huh. And there was like songs that were very like bluegrass adjacent or like country, okay. and like very beautiful harmonies. And do you know what the story is?
I vaguely remember this movie.
It's centered around these three brothers, the youngest of whom has like kind of aspirations.
I feel like we read this book. In middle school.
It's very school. Yeah. Yes. Harriet had also read it in middle school. And anyways, it's basically like Grease, but like edgier.
Mm-hmm.
Wherein there's the Greasers and then the Soches,
uh-huh.
who are like, you know, the posh kids or like the sporty kids who wear varsity jackets. Mm-hmm.
Which is West Side Story, which is Romeo and Juliet. Right, there's a lot of
Right, which is all these
on.
These things. I guess it's
that.
Not Grease.
I don't remember that at all, but...
Grease is more like the struggle between the men and the women, not between,
yeah,
like, the
true.
Classes.
But there's... Well, yeah.
Sorry. I feel you're going to hear another sound anomaly, because I had to leave the room to get my charger, but I'm back.
So you probably missed that whole story, but...
No. You missed nothing.
Did you? You should get a baby Bjorn to carry your iPad around.
I really should. I've carried it all kinds of places. Anyways, the story.
So the music
is about
the music
how
itself was better in the second act. You felt like
much better. Like it went from kind of like really remedial, kind of like what musical theater music sort of is in 2023. And then suddenly, in the second act, it, like, situated itself inside of a, like, real harmonic genre. And I was like, this is nice.
Yeah.
And the three brothers who play this kind of central family sang really well together. And I was like, this is really nice. And there's this kind of incredible fight scene in the rain, the rumble, where, like, I have to say the lighting for this show, very beautiful throughout. Very beautiful throughout. Right. Beautiful sunrises and beautiful effects, and like the show's very violent, so if you're into like kind of like quite convincing depictions of violence on stage, you will like this show. A lot of like drowning of people in tires, and so anyways, there's a scene where it pours rain and everybody does this kind of fighting, and the fight scene then turns into a very stylized kind of fight. In order to, I guess, like, I don't know why that choice was made, but it was effective.
Okay.
And, so that was really cool. This, like, the way it was lit, the way it was choreographed and staged, the fight scene was really good. The costume designer did a very good job. There was many good things about it, I will say. And then it just is unfortunately still
a musical.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's hard. It's challenging for me. But I had times of good feelings. Mm-hmm. And the performers, generally, very good and very hot. So if you want to see, basically, like, the cast of Riverdale do a Broadway show, this is for you. I mean, truly. And, like, with, like, clothes off and wet t-shirts and things. Uh-huh. So enjoy.
Yeah.
And Barton was great. Barton has, like, Barton is one of the Soch fellas.
Mm-hmm.
And I doesn't see that do too going much talking way, or singing. Really. Yeah, true. And but he plays a mean person in the show.
That's fine. And, the sweetest, kindest person playing someone mean is
sweetest,
nice.
Sweetest, kindest playing me. I know. And that was that. That was the Outsiders.
The musical.
I'm glad I stuck it out.
You know, it's also very early in the process. If it's a dress rehearsal, they have weeks of previews to mm-hmm. move things around.
They also did an out of town, so I don't know. They actually have a month of previews.
Yeah. Isn't that incredible? Is Illinois on Broadway doing previews? Or is it just like, this is the show, enjoy?
Illinois on Broadway is doing like 2 days, like so small. Yeah. Like the whole process is like completely truncated. Yeah. So it's just like, go, one preview, here's the show, enjoy, for, you know, 4 months only, get your tickets now. Yeah.
So, there you go, get your tickets now.
Yeah, so, so there was an announcement that Illinois is going to Broadway. This is what we're talking about, because we never discussed it on this podcast before.
Just alluded to it.
And it's great. We're really excited, and it happened. The announcement was on the same day that Bob Fosse's Dancing opened last year. Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Well, happy anniversary.
A year makes a difference. What else? I also went to a talk at the Jerome Robbins Dance Division Theater, or the Library mm-hmm. Theater, to see a talk, Lara Lubavitch at 80 years old talk. And that was interesting. I mean, I know all this stuff.
Yeah.
I know all this stuff.
Right.
But it's always nice to hear him talk. He's very eloquent, and Linda is such a great interviewer, mm-hmm. and they showed lots of interesting clips, and I love it when they show Lars ice skating choreography
Incredible.
For this, like, made-for-television thing to the Gustav Holst's The Planets, and they showed a quite extended clip this time, and I really was like, this is cool. I wish we'd do more of this.
Yeah. We're Pam Tanowitz for Ice Capades, please.
Definitely. And then the craziest thing that I saw this week was that I went to... Are you bored? Do you want me to...
No, what's the craziest thing? That sounds fun.
I went to the Koch Theater to see... a show that was conceived and made by Shen Wei.
Wow.
A person who I used to dance for.
Uh-huh. Oh, this is the showing of the thing that you saw, you were telling me about? I don't think on the podcast. No, this is something else entirely. Bless you.
Right, so Juilliard is doing... I sneezed. Juilliard is doing a Shen Wei piece called Map for their spring concert,
right.
which is an excellent piece, and I went to a rehearsal of it, and that was great. This is an entirely different thing, which is a Shen Wei work that's been brought to the United States and is toured to the Kennedy Center and now Lincoln Center, and is a group of Chinese dancers, and is a, like, Chinese-made production. Mm-hmm. So, which is... unusual in terms of, like, how we understand Shen Wei, because, you know, since 2001, he was making dances for Shen Wei Dance Arts, his American dance company, which kind of stopped, gosh, I don't know, 2015 or something. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't around. By that point, I really wasn't around. You know, I was only there from 2007 to 2009. But anyways, yeah. I went to this show, and I brought two friends from mine.
So we don't really know what's going on here.
No, I'd seen
this
the posters.
A new work?
A new work. And it was called Dong Po, A Life in Poems. And...
Okay.
Or just Life in Poems. And I'd seen the poster and I thought, well, it looks sort of like a Shen Wei piece, right?
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. This piece... I'm just going to do a little bit of reading. It was produced and performed by China Oriental Performing Arts Group Company, Meishan Song and Dance Theater. So this is obviously a government-subsidized Chinese production. And then it was co-presented by the American Dance Festival, who've always been hugely supportive of Shen Wei. They, like, made his career initially in America. Okay. The choreography, direction, and visual design is by Shen Wei. The stage design, costume design, makeup, and hair design is by Shen Wei.
A separate line item.
The separate line item. And then the composer, music director, Chen Qigang. The playwright is Shen Wei. A playwright, I mean.
Good grief.
Anyways, then there's some other collaborators who do, like, lighting and calligraphy and seal engraving and... acoustic designs, such okay. Because this show. Now, I'm almost nervous to talk about it because I'm like this. I feel like Shen Wei was either abducted by the Chinese government, or he was paid $10 million by the Chinese government.
Okay,
because. This show existed somewhere in between what I know of Shen Wei and what I imagine of Shen Yun. Which is like this pageant.
Yeah, I was thinking like Las Vegas, circus.
Right. Because Shen Wei sort of situated himself inside of a very specific aesthetic in the time that I knew him. Very specific, like more so than any choreographer I've ever known.
And, engaging with, what is contemporary here at that time, right?
Yes, it was always engaging in the contemporary, but also in a kind of, through a lens of Chinese opera history. Yes. Well, I mean, this is almost hard to describe, because it uses a lot of the choreographic structures that I know from his other works, right? There's a section where they dance on these boxes, which comes from Second Visit to the Empress, an opera that I was involved in 2007. It uses painting on the floor from Connect Transfer. It uses these movement vernaculars that come from Rite of Spring and Near the Terrace, and these partnering what is the word I'm thinking of? Partnering structures? I guess, that come from folding, you know, so like all these things are being pulled from his past works.
Dynamics.
And being danced by maybe. Yeah. Yeah. Languages. Oh my God. There we go. Partnering languages, movement languages. And these dancers are unbelievable. They're absolutely amazing. They not only have, the most exquisitely sequenced bodies one has ever seen, but they're also, they also have virtuosic kind of ballet foundation, so they can just, stick their legs all over the place, and,
Right.
It was, I mean...
Disciplined.
Yes. Uh-huh. Now, I had seen what the dancers did at the Beijing opening ceremonies, which was another Shen Wei production.
Right.
And I was amazed at that point. And
they
were dancers.
He's finally getting what he wants.
You know what? That is absolutely another idea. But aesthetically, and okay, A of all, the music was so cheeseball, huge orchestral, corny, silly, for a perfume commercial, just so bad. Yeah. With kind of interstitial music that was played on this kind of Chinese dulcimer And some of that was live, which was nice, was just this one woman sitting over to the side who would occasionally be lit and she would play. And so that was a relief. But so the music was insane. Something so outside of like also Shenhui's sonic universe, which included like Ligeti and Xenakis and John Tavener and like nothing to do with like what we heard last weekend. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then aesthetically, like the drops had all of this like text projected onto them in these like, and the translations were cuckoo lulu with like typos. It was like Chinese greeting cards that you would find like at a tchotchke shop on the Great Wall.
Incredible.
You know, like really insane, ugly fonts and like images of like butterflies with light shining through them.
Camp.
It was Chinese camp. And I was like, how is this possible? The whole aesthetic universe shifted from like black, gray, white, and red to pastels. Mm. And look, the pastels were well executed. I will say that. But this is Hallmark. So, it was insane. Wow. I was like, how is this happening? Anyways.
That sounds amazing.
I sat there just completely stunned for 90 minutes. But the dancers were outrageously good. And then I saw that there was a reception to which Shenhui alum had been invited. And I'm going to drag someone named Chelsea right now, who I guess was like, she's the liaison between Shenhui and us, the former dancers. But we never overlapped in the company, Chelsea and I. But she neglected to invite me to the reception. So I wasn't there, even though I could have been, and I would have loved to have asked Shenhui some questions.
A member of the Chinese Communist Party.
No, I wanted to be there with, the people I know from Shenhui to, like, say hello to Shenhui and ask him some questions, but I wasn't invited.
Well, I think you should drag the show harder than you have for that.
Oh, no, because I was actually impressed.
I know. Honesty, it's a tricky road to travel.
I mean, yeah, it was like cheesy in a way that like I would never expect from Shenhui, but like at the end of the day I saw some really tremendous dancing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like that's true of what am I saying? Communist discipline. Yeah.
They were also engaged in this kind of like attitude of grandeur that comes out of where they like in this piece called Near the Terrace, there was this staircase that was that spanned the whole width of the stage, but was probably, I don't know, like 12 steps. Well, they had one in this show that was like 60, right?
Yeah.
And it appeared silently during a transition behind the scrim. And when they revealed it, I was like, someone's going to die, because I was like, it looked so janky, like it wasn't lined up at the seams and stuff, and I was like, this is exciting. Very bad.
Exciting. What a thrill. It was
bad. Yeah. Anyways, that was the craziest thing that I saw in a long time, I would say. Long time. Okay, let's move on to
I have a bomb to drop, I think. I had never seen Dirty Dancing.
Oh my god.
So, oddly, we started with Dirty Dancing Havana Nights, which is an absolutely bizarre movie. Did you see this? Have you seen it? It's a prequel.
Certainly not. Who stars in it?
Someone, never to be seen again. And, what is his name? This great actor. Wow. I can't think of his name.
Really? Really?
Neither of them are very good dancers.
Oh, no. But is it focused on the Patrick Swayze character?
Patrick Swayze's there as like a
he's there?
He's in this movie as like a dance instructor at the hotel.
But not playing the character he plays in the original Dirty Dancing.
That's right. Which is strange, because it is described as a prequel.
Right.
But he's, this
But they're like, get him in here. Yeah,
which is,
get him
in here. It was nice. I mean, he's the best dancer in the movie. He's
unbelievable. I'm looking at the casting. Diego Luna is in it, famous from Star Wars, we love.
Right.
And also Y Tu Mama Tambien. And then we have Cela Ward.
Yes, as the mother.
Never forget Cela Ward. And then we have John Slattery.
And John Slattery is also good in this movie. Everyone else is I mean, the main actress, you're like, it's unclear. She doesn't know what kind of movie she's in.
Well, it's interesting. The women in this movie have a kind of look about them where you're like, because January Jones is the only like nameable actress in this movie, but they all kind of look like her, which is sort of like they look like nobody.
She's in one scene where she's mean. That's it. The pool.
Well, that's her thing. She's good at being sort of like remote and mean.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought it was like a kind of charming movie. And then we watched the original, which I thought was better than it needed to be.
Isn't it good? And like, also like, it gets into issues that are surprising that you're like, oh, like, I didn't know this movie was going to be about anything. Like women's, you know, like reproductive rights and like how the implications of that. Right. And
disappointing
it's
daddy.
It's really good.
The daddy dynamic is really interesting in terms of like,
yeah,
we're failing each other.
But daddy comes to the rescue. Doesn't he?
Well, yeah, but sort of begrudgingly, and then, you know, sort of this thing of like, no, this isn't about me just being who you want me to be. This is about me, like,
Patrick Swayze
finding myself.
Is so good in that movie.
It's crazy, but like the like preparation montage is so incredible.
In the water,
when she's like on her own, just like crossing this bridge thing, it's incredible.
Yeah,
they like you know, they do this like balancing thing on the tree. It's just really excellent.
She just really improves quickly.
Jack was saying she was like destroyed in the press because of her nose.
Well, you know, she got a nose job, and then her career was over because it's like,
crazy.
Who even is it? Yeah.
So hideous. But yeah, thoroughly enjoyed really both of those movies, honestly. I mean, ridiculing the prequel was also a joy, so.
Isn't the woman who plays the like his original partner just absolutely sensational?
Oh my god, absolutely.
Penny.
It's crazy.
She's so amazing at dancing and just like her whole, the way she looks and her costumes.
It's crazy.
And she's, yeah.
The energy. Which it's a weird dynamic because you're like, she's not, baby is not good. Which
no, she's
nice.
Never that good at dancing, but she's charming, and like you're along for the ride, and you're excited that she like even manages.
Yes,
you know?
But the contrast is so immense.
Patrick Swayze is doing flips off the stage, and you're like, oh my god, and he's really gyrating those hips, you know. I appreciate how that movie really like is not attached to being a period accurate film. It just kind of like moves. The 80s was very adept at doing that. They didn't care.
Yeah, it's also, I think its strength is also like it's not trying to be a dance movie either.
Right.
Like it really is focused on like this story. And it delivers and it has great characters, great just like tonal. Like, there's this moment just early on, like, maybe, like, one of the first nights they get there that she, like, leaves the cabin and it's sort of dusky. And I'm just like, wow, this is such a feeling of, like, summer night.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm just going to, like, wander down and see what's going on. That feeling. Which is a kind of, like,
amazing.
Pre-phone dynamic as well. But
yeah,
I think it lives on. But
That movie really let it feel contemporary for the 80s, where you were like, it's the 80s, but they were like, but it's the 60s.
Right.
And you're like, no. Even there's all the styling is sort of 80s. It's interesting.
I was also...
Or some of the characters are 80s and some of them are not.
Fascinated by... Because her mother is this actress that plays the grandmother in the Gilmore Girls.
Oh.
And in like the, you know, fourth or whatever season of... that next show that she does. What is that show called?
Marvelous Mrs.
Maisel? Yes, they do this whole summer camp thing that is very Dirty Dancing.
Oh.
So, I, you know, and that actress isn't, I don't think she's in that show at all, but it's an interesting universe of feelings, I guess, or something.
Yeah. So, wow.
Yeah, that was a nice thing to check
out. It's great. I'm glad you got to. I'm glad that you've ticked that off the list of important movies to know about.
Did it? Yeah. Double feature.
Well, I watched another important movie that one must know about.
What is it?
It's called Wonka.
What a pleasure! I thought it was a fun movie. Not good, but like I fun.
Was. It took me some time to get over how horrific the songs are.
Well, Noodle is a huge mistake.
Noodle, I'm sorry. This person was not intended to act on camera. Okay. And also to choose the name
Please
Noodle.
Please don't call someone Noodle.
Don't call anyone Noodle and then write entire songs about
because
the word
what
Noodle.
What this pointed out was that I want songs to be universal.
Right.
Not about
Can you
Noodle.
Wait? I have this like bit bigger, broader question, which is like, did they screen test Timothée Chalamet and this young actress? Because I'm like, there is no...
It's absolutely bizarre. What is the nature of their relationship? Like, are they,
but also,
are they
like,
supposed to be like siblings? Is this romantic? What is happening?
Yeah, I think
here?
It was like sibling style because they're,
Why
you know,
isn't
orphaned
it a romance?
Style people. But also like her reconciliation with her mom at the end, someone who she's never met. And then she's just like, hey, I love you. I was like, this is so bad. Yeah. But
most
of
the plot was like poorly constructed.
So bad. So bad. But to have when you put these excellent British actors and things, they do immediately improve
Absolutely.
Everything.
Like, they can really fill
Olivia
up.
Colman and that guy who she was mm-hmm. with in the mm-hmm. in the boarding house, and Hugh Grant as the Oompa Loompa.
Barely
very
in this
charming.
Movie. I thought that was fascinating.
I thought he was in it
Well,
enough.
He comes in really late. And
right.
then...
Even the three evil chocolatiers, like, I thought they were sort of well-executed. But, yeah,
yes.
I don't know. Like, it doesn't hold together at all, and it's quite ugly. And...
It's pretty
I
CGI.
Did,
it's pretty,
Do you know what I liked? I was a little bit swept away by the balloon scene where they sang and danced on the rooftops.
Well, it's absolutely
of London
absurd because balloons don't work like that. But you know,
no, but it was nice.
Sure,
it was nice. And then you didn't
well,
like
because
that
because the nature of their relationship. I was just like, also like, now you're gonna go back into that hole. You can fly around with balloons. What are we doing?
Well, that's the thing that
this
magic,
that
was confusing. That
like,
I was
make
like,
a flame happen?
I was like, what exactly is keeping you in this like laundry facility? Like, you can literally leave and not go back, but they always go back.
It doesn't make sense. Like,
no, and she's like, I owe them 40,000, you know, pounds or whatever, and then it's like, so I guess I just have to keep going back. I'm like, no, you don't. These people aren't going to come hunt
it
you down.
Doesn't
they
make
just
sense.
Like, none of it made sense, but. Also, like, to be honest, I didn't read Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, that's not what I understand to be his history.
Yeah, I don't think they care about anything.
Because I understood his history to be that, like, he was the son of a dentist, and
right.
so he...
That
right.
right,
and so his whole life is in rejection of, like, the trauma he experienced as a child.
Yeah.
Because he, like, wasn't
bizarre.
Allowed to have... Yeah. They just like, throw
it's
that
very...
away. Now
his
childhood was with Sally Hawkins, like, on a riverboat. I'm like, what?
Yeah. Pretty bad.
Anyways.
But I enjoyed it, somehow.
Timmy did, outside of the very bad singing, he had some charming moments, and I was at times struck by how... ineffective he is in period work because he's like too contemporary as a human.
He really can't do
and
big acting like most of the characters
no,
are doing. So when that wasn't
no.
and I don't know. I didn't think there were scenes that were really bad of that.
Really bad. Really bad.
But there was also really plenty bad. Where he wasn't doing that. And that was
Well,
fine.
his scenes of, like, reflection and, like, mm-hmm. tearful moments were beautiful yeah. because he's just excellent at that. He can really just sit in front of a camera and, like, cry convincingly. And you're like, oh, Timmy.
Oh, little but, Timmy. Okay.
But when he's, like, trying to be kooky-looky, I'm like,
here's what I'm not here for. Timothy Chalamet playing Bob Dylan.
Is that a thing?
Supposedly, this is what's happening. And I am here to say No,
definitely not.
Like, just don't even make that movie if that's what you need to do to make it.
Yeah. Call Taron Egerton. Get a real
just
actor.
Just watch I'm Not There and go home. Okay.
Timmy's a real actor.
Dream Scenario is on HBO. Jack watched it. I watched most of it with them. I saw that movie in the theater.
I don't know what that is.
Cage. It's a
dream scenario.
It's a movie that I really liked until I didn't like it. And rewatching it, I kind of liked it more. I realized that most of the movie is like a really good experience for me, and there's just like a section that you could just take out of the movie and it would be done. So I do encourage you to watch it if you can watch it for free. It's on HBO.
Okay. Wait, say the name of it again.
Dream Scenario.
Okay. I watched The Creator.
Yeah. And?
I'm very well executed, certainly.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks amazing. The story is fine. It's fine. Yeah. And if you can just, like, step away from reason and logic and stuff.
Yeah, like, it's like a Wonka kind of vibe, like, where you, like, just don't think about what's happening.
No, but I thought the child was truly an excellent little actor, and Denzel Washington's son was great, and Gemma Chan, who's barely in the movie, mm-hmm. was great.
Gorge.
And oh my god, well, the whole movie is quite beautiful. Yeah. Like, very well designed film. And the effects are very good, and the spacecraft design mm-hmm. is very good. Like, the whole design of it is very good. So great. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did too. I think it's worth a watch.
Yeah. Something. I also watched this very good, CNN Martha Stewart 4-part documentary series that she didn't participate
about her.
That is about her, but there's just so much footage out there that it doesn't, you know, they say right at the beginning of the documentary series Martha Stewart declined to be involved in the making of this
mm-hmm.
series, and so you're like, oh no, but then
there's endless
you're
footage.
Like, oh, it there's endless commentary from her on everything, so it's like, doesn't matter. And they have like excellent talking heads who are like people who worked for her. Why you
well gasp? I also feel like Martha Stewart is not someone who's like ever gonna, like, either she's always telling the truth, like there's like nothing else. It's a sort of like what you see is what you get is the feeling. Is that right? Like,
definitely.
I'm like, what is an interview? Just like her saying more things. We've already seen her say
just her
everything.
Saying the same stuff, like literally from the like inception of her life. Her whole mode of operation was entirely consistent. Like, she was like trained to be ambitious. And when she like, she was working in New York City as a model from when she was like in her mid teens, and she just never stopped working. And she got in with the boys when she was really young, and she just like knew what she wanted. And so there's this interesting shift in the story where she like gets married at 19 and then starts to kind of invest in a more domestic life with her husband, who, you know, and she really cared about her marriage. Mm-hmm. And she had Alexis when she was very young. And, you know, but her whole way of being as a human was that she needed to figure out a way to, like, turn this domestic life into a business. And she did. Because she'd already, like, worked in the stock market as a very young woman. And it's really fascinating story. And you get to hear from, like, the people who she originally worked for amongst the men. And then when she starts her catering business, you get to hear about how she approached it with the women who worked for her.
Wow.
And then it's really good. It was really interesting. And then this I did not quite know. Like, we all know that Martha Stewart went to prison for insider trading, right? But do you know what the charge was?
No.
So she very stupidly sold off stocks in this pharmaceutical company when it was about to, like, go bust, right? Because they didn't get an FDA approval, and she knew, she was family friends with the guy who owned the company. Right. And so he tipped her off. She called her financial advisor. She sold all of her stock in that company, which only amounted to $40,000. Uh-huh. And the following day, the company announced their, like, that they didn't get the FDA approval and their stock mm-hmm. plummeted, whatever. So, of course, she eventually gets, you know, found out, and she lies.
She
just lies, lies, and lies, and lies. She changes her story.
It's like Donald Trump with his documents.
And so she would have received essentially no conviction.
Bye, you gotta go to prison.
For $40,000, but because she lied.
This is like what always happens.
Yeah, she got sent to prison. And she could have absolutely appealed the conviction, and it just would have gone on longer. But she was like, I don't want this to go on any longer. I'm serving my time. She chose to go to prison.
Well, she's Madge.
She really was like, I'm strong enough for this, and I'll get it over with. So she really left for 5 months, and she went to prison, and it was okay.
And she came back and was like, I'm just gonna continue.
She got out of prison and walked to her private jet wearing a knitted poncho from one of her inmate friends, and she flew off. And I was like,
incredible.
Wow. And she, by the time she got out of a car to walk across the tarmac to board the plane, she was already fully done. Her makeup and hair were beautiful. Her whole out. I was like, she did that in a car.
Well, there you go.
Anyways, it's a very, it's a somewhat inspiring and chilling documentary, but I think very good. I would definitely recommend
it. I'm reminded of this recent episode of the Ezra Klein podcast, which is a podcast that I've, like, nearly thrown my phone listening to. It's tricky, but I do think that there's value in, like, hearing things you don't want to hear from people. So I think I still recommend it. And this episode is about, like, population growth and not growth, whatever that would be called. Decreased
population. Decreasing.
You know, everyone's freaking out about population numbers.
Can we just be okay with it being less?
Well, because, like, okay? Basically, if your population is going down as a country, that mm-hmm. means you're basic. It's like you're going to lose power.
That's fine. Why are, like, people preoccupied with power? Shouldn't they be preoccupied with happiness and quality of life?
With power. They equate money with happiness.
Speaking of Martha Stewart, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And, you know,
she was jumping up and down when her company went public, and she went from being a millionaire to a billionaire in 2 seconds.
Well, you know, gets you more geese.
Yeah, she was really jumping.
It's a bizarre conversation and interesting. It, you know, the thing about, like, this question of, like, how can you get people to have more babies, essentially, which, like, sort of comes down, like, policy doesn't really make that happen. Seems quite difficult. But this thing of like, when people, because if as a culture, women are having children later in life, you are, you know, bound to have fewer children because there is a time limit.
Right.
So it's an interesting conversation. I think it's, like, going to be a two-part thing. Because it didn't really, for me, I'm like, but is it a good thing? Or is it, like, they talk about that there's, like, a left and a right version of response, which is, on the left, it's like, great, because, like, our planet is over-inhabited. And on the right, it's like, you know, more this economic crisis. So, I don't know. That's interesting. I mean, something that, like, I don't think about as someone who doesn't want to have children and thinks that, you know, is a left-wing nut who thinks there should be fewer right. people on the planet because we seem to be killing
them. I mean, to me, it just seems logical. I'm like, it doesn't feel particularly radical or left-wing to be like, hasn't this, like, massive... up like the graph of like population was like very steady for most of humanity, and then it just like in the last couple centuries has exploded. So I'm kind of like, this doesn't seem good, let's just slow it down.
Yeah, it does seem and we like are. A correction would yeah. be wise, but you know yeah. there's a thing with like you the desire is to have like a consistency, because otherwise, then you have to, like, build more infrastructure in different places for different, you know, so if they're, like, more children, then you need, like, more schools and you need, you know, so it's complicated. Right. It's interesting. A lot of things that I never considered. So, it's interesting.
Okay. As your client.
Okay. I've also, fallen into, Hot Ones on YouTube. Which is something I sort of refused to watch because it seemed disgusting.
It's an ugly show. Like, yeah.
Sort of criminal. But yeah. I don't know why I ended up in there. But I was like, this guy is so charming. I'm here for... like, isn't it crazy? There's something this, about like, guy it who that I was just like, this is... I get it now.
He's so famous. I don't even... No one even knows his name. His name is Sean just like something. Sean the hot guy. The hot ones?
Hot Ones
guy. He's met like every extremely famous person alive.
A lot of them. Yeah, a lot of them.
Yeah. I can't believe people. I would never do
that.
Well,
it's interesting. Now that I've watched a bunch of them, I it makes sense to me. Because he is... you kind of feel taken care of by him. And it doesn't, yeah. the whole structure of it is as, like, non-exploitative beyond the principle of it.
Right, because he just sort of talks you through your history, but then, like, you really, like,
yeah, and he's, like, you know, like, yeah. they're trying to help you through it. It's interesting, yeah. different, you know, people's different ways of, like, going through it. Florence Pugh is crazy.
What are other highlights? Tell us the best ones to watch.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, we love her.
Is really fun. But there's also this other show called, like, Chicken Cafe or something. What is this show called? Chicken? It's a British, it's a London show with this person who, I don't know what their history is, but now... she does like red carpets and stuff as well, but it's basically like going on a date. The premise is like you're going to like a chicken place on a date with this host person, and it's very Becky Abrams vibes. I was like, this is so, she is a genius. Highly recommend. That's a fun show. And then they Hot Ones and this the show chicken place, they like go on each other's shows, which is a cute crossover thing. But yeah, I really was like charmed by the whole thing.
All right, maybe I'll do a little exploring.
Mezcal.
Oh, he does hot chicken. Does he does chicken the chicken or
house or whatever?
Oh, you know, I love to look at him and be amongst
yeah it's
his...
very, you know, and that's very like flirty Charmtown.
Charmtown.
And then the other food thing is I made Claire DeBoer's brown bread recipe, which is on the New York Times.
Okay.
Which was nice. I'll make it again.
Is this a yeasted bread?
It's a yeasted bread, but it's a no-knead bread. It's made with a lot of molasses.
Not it's a one-day no-knead bread. I love that. Gorgeous.
It's a quick, easy little loaf. And then Melissa Clark has this red lentil barley soup, which is, you know, a spin on her red lentil soup, which I made.
That's
and
nice.
Delicious.
Okay. Barley. That's the thing I never make.
Absolutely.
Barley. I could have some barley.
Yeah, I'm into exploring more kinds of grains as well.
So. Oh, I love that. Big news in my life.
Big news.
I got some cowboy boots.
Oh my god.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just in we'll post a picture
I think we're of 9 days, my boots on the
9 days out from Beyoncé's next album release.
Really? I'm gonna send you a picture of my boots.
With your legs in them.
Yeah, of course.
Great.
And then they can go on our Instagram thing, whatever that's called.
Instagram.
Our Instagram.
Perfect. That's it. That's it. There's also this Wim Wenders documentary about Anselm Kiefer on Criterion.
That was nominated for an Academy Award.
Oh, wow. These are great. They're a very like yellow leather.
Yeah. Vibe. I mean, kind of khaki.
Sure. Sure. Khaki. But you'll see them on the Instagram.
Yeah. Oh, I'll send you a full body.
Full body. Full body.
Okay, I'm sending you two.
Nude photos. Only boots. Only boots. Just boots.
Just boots.
From the archive. You look so tall.
They make you really, they do get you up there.
Leg extenders. Like
they give you an inch and a half or so.
That's fun.
Yeah.
You haven't gone out with them yet, huh?
Tonight's the night.
So we'll have tonight's a review next week.
The night.
You think it's going to be rough?
Yeah.
On your feet?
I'm a little nervous. I mean, I danced around in my apartment. They feel pretty good, but it's a different story when you know, it's just always a different story. Yeah.
Yikes, yikes.
I'm a little scared, but we'll see. I'm going to obviously have other shoes in case, because I don't trust the system like that.
I think that's very wise.
Thank you so much.
Okie dokie, that does it for us this week.
Really, really good. Really good episode.
I want the real tea, so let's end this and we'll talk about Broadway and stuff.
Okay!
All right, well, we'll see you here, same time, same place. Thanks for listening.
Love you, bye.